Happy Valentine's Day. It's the Fan pregame on Sportsnet, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. For the next 90 minutes, we're talking about former Raptors that we loved tonight.
Pascal. Very sincere start from you here.
Yeah, it's Valentine's Day. I love it. Pascal Siakam night in Toronto. First return to Scotiabank Arena. Tribute video to be done before the game in the starting lineup announcement. So if you're watching this, get to the arena early because you don't want to miss it. Plus NBA All-Star Weekend coming up this weekend. So we're going to talk to Sirit Sohi of The Ringer in a couple minutes to break it all down.
Yeah, we'll ask her about that juicy report involving LeBron James and the Golden State Warriors in a trade that did not happen. We'll get to that
in a second.
It would have been awesome if it did. It's Wednesday night hockey tonight on Sportsnet. The Sharks, who actually aren't that bad, or at least not as bad as other NHL teams. They're in Winnipeg to take on the Jets. ESPN's John Buccigross will join us for a spin around the NHL in about a half hour.
And then we're going to throw it courtside at 7 p.m. On Sportsnet 590, The Fan only, to tee up tonight's game with Smith and Jones, Scotty Barnes, Pascal Siakam, been the main topics the last couple days here in the news cycle. Obviously, this game against the Pacers, you know, Raptors have not been doing well in terms of standings, but I guess the discussion kind of starts with a face of the past and a face of the present, which are going head-to-head tonight.
Yeah, in a situation that could be considered laden with irony because Pascal's return may prevent Scotty Barnes from suffering Pascal's fate, which was having been sat a game, 4 years ago when he left a bench early, like Scotty Barnes did against the San Antonio Spurs, the other night. So if you're using precedent, then maybe Scotty Barnes sits tonight, but you don't believe that would be the case.
I don't know. It feels like a little bit of a different time that we're in right now. I know we've seen this story. Pascal obviously leaving. I think he left like 26 seconds early. He fouled out of a game, etc. We just saw Scotty Barnes leave a couple seconds early at the end of a game against the Spurs. I do think that it's hard to draw exact parallels between Scotty and Pascal. And I definitely want more from Scotty Barnes. It's not an excuse for Scotty Barnes. I think he's been showing signs of immaturity this season, whether that's just not hustling back on the defensive end, standing, you know, out in the post wide open with his hands up in the air. Like, there's clearly areas where Scotty Barnes can improve. I don't think this should be like a referendum on Scotty Barnes's leadership abilities, but things have started to pile up. It's not just one situation anymore. And I think what we saw a couple of days ago with Scotty Barnes and the Spurs, and then his discussion with about Darko and Darko's discussion about Scotty having a little bit of different stories, I guess I'm just longing for a little bit of what Pascal Siakam brought as a leader, right? But those were very different renditions of the Raptors. And I think they both...
Different coaches, to be fair.
Different coaches, of course. But the way that Pascal became a leader for the Raptors took a very different route to what Scotty Barnes is being thrust into right now as a 22-year-old. Pascal, that culture was built on culture. It was the Raptors were a bench mob. They were a Kyle Lowry who gave his heart and soul to every single moment that he was a Raptor. You had DeMar. You had just like this environment that held you accountable. And I don't think that Scotty's in the same environment right now. It's kind of hard to contrast those two. I mean, Pascal was one of the greatest development stories in NBA history. He came from nothing to become a super, superstar. And Scotty came in, was a lottery pick, as rookie of the year. He's already the face of a franchise 2 or 3 years into his season. And I think that's definitely showing that it's buckling on him a bit.
Isn't that the problem, though? Like, therein lies the problem, that you've abandoned a culture that worked. And I feel like if you can follow the breadcrumbs, the paper trail, whatever you want to call it, and you can kind of go back to the one point and the one primary issue being, okay, Scotty Barnes was given the world in an environment where you were supposed to earn everything that you got. You were supposed to earn your keep with the Toronto Raptors. And when Scotty Barnes was selected higher than, you know, pretty much anyone that has been around this team for a little while and came in and had immediate impact, he was given the world. And you're given the world to a 22-year-old someone in their early 20s. There are definitely pitfalls associated with that strategy. But abandoning everything else, abandoning principles because you are laying your bed with one player is not just a gigantic risk, but also does something to alienate everybody else. And I'm not saying Scotty Barnes should be suspended for this game and that he should be, you know, slapped on the wrist every single time that he acts up. But there have been, and you said piling up, teachable moments or potential teachable moments have been piling up for Scotty Barnes over the last couple weeks, couple months, this season, really since he's entered the league. And at some point, you got to act on one or nothing's going to change. To change behavior, someone has to put their foot in the ground. And if he just continues to do as he pleases, then the Raptors, in many ways, have lost their way, the way that made them so successful just a couple years ago.
I think there's going to be a lot more of these learning opportunities for Scotty Barnes, which can be a blessing and a curse, because this Raptors team isn't getting any better anytime soon. You know, they're having a really rough stretch right now. I would hope that that's kind of when the hardest lessons are learned. We will see if that's the route in which they take and how Darko plays into that and how Masai, you know, helps push that learning along for Scotty Barnes. But it's going to be an interesting moment when we see Pascal Siakam hit the floor tonight. We remember what he meant to this franchise, and he gets a tribute video, and everybody lives in that moment of, ah, we did have something really special with that player. And maybe it's a young version of that with Scotty Barnes, but we haven't seen maybe the growth that we've wanted so far in this season. Let's bring in Siret Sowe of The Ringer joining us now. Siret, thanks so much for jumping on. Last time we chatted, you were outside in the sun, and yeah, I'm glad that you're not showing us the beautiful weather that you're having this time around. I appreciate that.
I'm just going to move my frame up a little bit here because I thought I was hiding my messy room, and I'm not.
You're all good. You're all good.
Yeah. A little bit of 22-year-old behavior on my part today. How are you guys doing?
That's funny. Well, let's start with the Scotty Barnes discussion, because it's been pretty hot here, obviously, in Toronto for the last couple of days at least. And now I guess it's an interesting position to be put in where Pascal Siakam's coming back in to see, you know, where he grew into the guy that he was and the people that loved him here in the city. And you have Pascal versus Scotty in a sense of the old face and the new face. I wonder for you, if we start with Scotty, is it just being thrust into something a little too soon and normal growing pains of a 22-year-old, or are you seeing other learning lessons that he should be acting upon, or Darko or Masai helping?
I think there's a lot of things going on. I think with these things, you always have to isolate it to the person involved. And I think what we've seen from Scotty Barnes so far in his career, in good ways and in bad, is that he is a force multiplier, and he rides the emotional highs and lows of the game and how he's feeling within it. And at its best, I think we got an incredible rookie year in which everything was a novelty and he was so excited just to be playing with the level of talent he was playing with. Every game it seemed to almost present something new, and we saw just the exuberance, the joy. Like, this guy couldn't get a smile off his face. And I think in a year two we saw him really, really struggle with trying to, you know, negotiate a new role, a new leadership role, amongst a group of guys that, you know, to your point earlier, Justin, had come up in a very, very different way, had to earn everything. And there was definitely some tension there that I think he struggled to navigate. And now I think we're seeing the frustration of losing. We're seeing the frustration play by play. And one of the things that he said in practice was that, you know, when he expresses frustration, a lot of that frustration is about himself. You know, we mentioned some turnovers that he had, and that is something that he can struggle with. Is he sort of, you know, I think he's trying to find the edge of his ceiling too. So we're going to see a lot of mistakes, but he does get down on himself when he makes them. And I think the thing that he's going through right now is understanding. And I think this is something that is hard. I mean, honestly, at any age, we can talk about young people, but understanding that the way that you internalize frustration projects itself onto those around you. And I think that for him, that's especially the case because of how emotionally exuberant he is, and just taking it back to the force multiplier thing. Like, everything he does has an impact. And then on top of that, you add the fact that, you know, this is a guy who's been thrust into this leadership position. He's expected to, the guy, you know, the guys behind him are expected to take his lead. So there's a number of things going on. I think obviously, like, this is early for him to be in this situation. And I also think specific to who he is, like, that's, we're going to see this, it's going to be up and down. And I think, you know, it's just a matter of, is he this guy, and do the Raptors then need to find some sort of grounding, stabilizing force? Like, you know, you go You know, you take it down to a lot of guys like this. I think, you know, Draymond Green might be the most dramatic example, and that's not to suggest that Draymond and Scotty are, you know, emotional siblings in any way. But that's a team that also had Steph Curry as a counterbalance. I think at their best, when their locker room was at their best, they had Andre Iguodala as a counterbalance too. There's a lot of different ways to lead, and I think when you have a guy like Scotty, if he's going to continue to be this emotional, you have to find, you know, the guys that you build around him with, you probably want to balance that out.
I think the hardest part of this is that maybe the only fix, and again, things can change over time, right? Maturity happens, and growth as both a basketball player and person and leader and all that stuff will naturally happen, organically happen, at least you hope. But like the quick fix thing is, would be having someone as good as him being on the roster, right? Someone who would be considered his contemporary, where it's like, hey, we both have to earn this. We both have to own this, and we can work together in order to balance each other out. And maybe they thought they had that or something close to it in Emmanuel Quickley, but it just hasn't worked the way I think many people, maybe Masai Ujiri included, expected. Have you seen or have you picked up on the fact that his skills maybe haven't translated as well from New York to Toronto, or is it too early to make any really real calls on that?
I think it's a little too early to make some real calls on that. I think he's going through a lot of growing pains himself. He's also being thrust into a new role, which I think maybe we haven't had a front row seat to that in Toronto necessarily, right? But this was a guy who, I mean, essentially the reason he was traded was because of this idea that because you have Jalen Brunson, because I think the Knicks have really settled on Dante DiVincenzo as like the second starter there, there wasn't a lot of room for Emmanuel Quickley to expand his game as far as being a lead point guard and his own self-creation. Now he's been thrust into this role on this team mid-season where things look really, really different. There are definitely actionable things that I think he can improve on. I think his finishing can definitely get a lot better. I think if he adds some strength in the offseason, that'll solve a lot of the issues that he's having on both ends. But I think, like, honestly, like his general counting numbers, they've gone up. His usage has gone up. His assists have skyrocketed. His assists have basically doubled. Now, some of that is a Raptors system, but it's also a system that he's still getting used to. And I also don't think we've seen a lot of the Barnes IQ two-man game as much as we were expecting to. Maybe that's something that we'll see after the All-Star break. Maybe we need a whole training camp to really get that cemented in a way you'd like. I like what I've seen so far with him and Kelly Olynyk on the floor together. I love getting spacing around him. But, you know, I think it's good. I think it's going to take time with IQ. I think he's in a new situation. He's learning the Raptors. He's learning this new version of himself too, because this is like, you know, he got a lot of comparison, for example, to a guy like Tyrese Maxey. Tyrese Maxey had a lot more opportunity to grow into the role that he's now playing than Quickley has. While Quickley can, I still think, project out to be a really strong NBA guard, like probably a fringe all-star type. I think it's just going to take longer. I think we have to watch him rep it out.
Tonight on the other side, of course, we're going to be celebrating Pascal Siakam's return, both in video tribute and, I guess, in an emotional sense. It is Valentine's Day, so it kind of worked out. You know, someone that Raptors fans definitely loved, and there'll be lots of 43s in the stands tonight. I wonder for you, since it's been about a month until since the Raptors did trade Pascal Siakam. Raptors obviously gone in one direction, 4-10, and the Pacers, I thought, would be in a little bit better. They've only gone 6-8. Tyrese Haliburton with a little bit of a nagging injury concern, which hasn't helped. But is there a sign that this Pacers team is better than what they've shown over this stretch with Pascal Siakam being added? And how has he helped change maybe the ceiling or hopefully the aspirations for the Pacers moving forward?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think this team is a lot better than what they've showed so far. Ty Haliburton, not only was he injured, but then when he came back, he had the minutes restriction. And you can see it. Like, he's been playing with some frustration. I think he's a little bit frustrated not being able to do some of the things that he's normally able to do. That Knicks game, that incredible pass off the backboard and to the corner to Siakam. I love seeing the smile on Siakam's face. Again, I'd like to see him smiling big again. That's been great to see. And I think we've seen some really good stuff from Siakam alone. It hasn't necessarily translated into, you know, full chemistry with the team quite yet, but he's playing in so much more empty space. His attempts at the rim have jumped by quite a bit. He's been more efficient His role just feels a lot more clarified. He has a lot more space. And I think we're also seeing some growth, like, from Miles Turner, too, who has been able to do a really good job of playing the high-low game with him. I was kind of, you know, worried a little bit about how that would work. But they've done a really good job of creating space for each other. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think now there's also they're an interesting team. You know, I think now they have Ty and Siakam as their 1-2. They don't really rebound well. Turner's not really ever been a great rebounder, and that's where I'm curious about, like, the young guys. Jairus Walker is still a ways away, but he feels like a guy that could perfectly fit into that role eventually, just as, you know, being as big as he is could be a good counterbalance. But then the other guy, like Ben Mathurin, who, you know, obviously I'm sure a lot of the people listening to this have been familiar with his game for a long time. He has, I think, struggled to fit into this new context of the Pacers offense, which is, you know, pace, space, just moving the ball incredibly quickly. He's been coming off the bench. Like, his Andrew Nembhard, the other guy, like, everyone here is familiar with, has cemented himself as just an incredible defender. And I think you need that around Ty Halliburton. But, you know, I think the Mathurin thing needs to sort itself out. Maybe he can be that third guy. If not, I think they can make another move down the line. But you look up and you've got Ty Halliburton now surrounded by 4+ defenders in the starting lineup. I think they have a really great configuration. I don't think it's showed up on paper yet, but I think the reasons for that are pretty obvious, and I'm really excited to see what this team looks down the stretch in March and April.
Sirit Zoe of The Ringer on the line with us. Okay, it's NBA All-Star weekend this weekend. How has this event evolved in your eyes, Sirit? Is it still come with a level of excitement? What are you looking forward to the most? Mm-hmm. When you look at NBA All-Star weekend, what to you is most important?
Evolution is not necessarily the word that I would use when I think about the NBA All-Star weekend. I mean, this is totally shot down by the fact that now the next few games are going to be in San Francisco and in LA. But I had a conspiracy theory that Adam Silver was just trying to torpedo the All-Star game by sending it to a whole bunch of locations that people didn't really necessarily want to go to. That has been proven wrong. That's why I generally keep these things to myself. But I don't love the All-Star game. It's just not the most fun weekend for me. I won't be there. I'm very happy to announce. And yeah, I love the three-point contest. Every once in a while, the dunk contest really ends up being awesome. The best year we had, I think, was the first year that they used the Elam ending, and that was super exciting. But even that has faded. It hasn't really created the same intensity in the ensuing years. And like now they're going back to the old format with East and West. I think, you know, the NBA is an interesting place with innovation, I think, right? Like, I think sometimes they focus too much on the little things and just trying to try something new, because everybody likes it when you try something new, even if you're kind of trying to fix something that isn't broken. But at the expense of just the actual on-court product and the things that people actually care about. So yeah, I don't know. It's been a weird sort of tinkering ground for the NBA. I don't think a lot of the stuff that they've done has worked. I think they just need to allow it to be a bit of a pageant showcase for the best talent in the league, and just accept the fact that, look, like, All-Star games generally across the leagues, people don't get that excited for anymore for whatever reason. Like, you know, like, no, nobody cares about the Pro Bowl. Nobody really cares about NHL All-Star. The only thing, I mean, granted, I'm not an NHL person, but the only thing I saw from it was Justin Bieber. And yeah, there's, I don't know.
It's a big win. It's a big win, Sirit. It's a big win.
We had fun. We got to see Bieber perform. That was fun.
It means something when it's in your city.
Maybe I'm cynical. Cynical, and I'm like, give me the games.
Yeah. I think it's a local thing.
It was
right?
in our city.
It's in your city, and maybe you know it'll be in your city soon. I thought the court at the airport would have got you excited, but
it's pretty
I guess not.
No,
it's cool. Honestly, that's cool. also, a funny thing. I think they just did it. And didn't really tell anybody about it, but the marketing for it just kind of naturally took off, which is great. But yeah, I would agree. I think that's probably the most exciting thing. And I'm sure during the weekend they'll have cool stuff going on. I mean, Indiana's basketball history is so rich that I'm sure there'll be cool things going on. I think Iowa plays their the weekend after. Granted, I don't think they'll get there that quickly, but it'll be, you know, it'll be a cool weekend for basketball in Indiana. You get the All-Star game, and then you get Caitlin Clark next week.
There you go. We don't have so much time to dig into this one, which we probably could have a full hour on. But big story today was that the Warriors made an unsuccessful bid to try to convince the Lakers and LeBron to come over and pair him with Steph Curry. This was from Woj and Ramona Shelburne earlier today. That would have been more exciting than the All-Star weekend. Most likely, everybody would have had their jaws dropped if this had happened. Or just your thought when you saw this today, how incredibly bizarre and exciting maybe that would have been if that did happen.
I love it. I love that they went for it. I love that they went for it. I love that also in that story, Daryl Morey called and asked about LeBron's availability, to which Rob Pelinka, and you have to respect this, basically was like, is Joel Embiid available? That'll end the phone call real quick. Yeah, it would have been amazing if it happened. I think on the court, it makes all the sense in the world. I think like LeBron's had moments in his career where he's flirted with the idea of playing with Steph before. He obviously has this friendship with Draymond Green as well. That's very, very well documented. He fixes a lot of the issues that they have. Frankly, I would have loved to seen it. Honestly, I'm kind of sick of the Lakers and LeBron. I think that this is just a marriage of convenience. LeBron wants to live in LA where his family is, where he can, you know, focus on all the other things that he's focusing on. And there's nothing wrong with that. This isn't like an anti, you know, second act branding sort of rant here, but more so just the fact that we know why this marriage exists. I think from the Lakers side, they want him to retire as a Laker from a legacy perspective. That stuff is obviously very important to them, but I just look at the now. I look at what this Lakers team has been. Honestly, for LeBron's entire tenure, they've basically, I was looking at this yesterday, they're basically like a 500 team. Their winning percentage has been 53%, which I don't know. You thought it would go a lot better than this. Yeah, I'm ready. I'm ready for both sides to part ways personally. Maybe we'll see it happen in the offseason. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if the Lakers could get a bunch of assets for LeBron and kind of go full circle for LeBron too, to be traded for once. As opposed to being the guy, the puppet master. So yeah, I understand why everybody made their calls. I kind of honestly wish it was a more serious conversation.
Yeah, I think you're right about the offseason being one that will bring hopefully some chaos, hopefully something different, because you're right. I like to shake things up. We appreciate your time today, Sierra. Happy Valentine's Day, and we'll chat with you soon.
Happy Valentine's Day.
Thanks so much.
Me.
Of course. Sierra Soey of The Ringer joining us, as we said tonight. A big one, obviously, Pascal Siakam in town. Get to your seats early because they'll be doing the video tribute as a part of the starting lineups being introduced. That is at 7:30 on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, of course, and Sportsnet 1.
I think she nailed it with the LeBron puppet master thing. My take on the failed proposal or the failed bid to get LeBron to Golden State is that LeBron is and the ironic thing is that he would have greenlit the decision, but I don't think his ego would let him get traded, honestly. I think he has to make the move somewhere else if he's ever going to make it. And again, he would be that one who had to be like, yes, I want to go, let's do it. But I feel like LeBron has to make every decision, not having decisions made for him. And for that reason, I think just then, non-starter, because LeBron's not making the LeBron move for LeBron.
Okay, we got lots of show left to unpack. We're going to talk again with Smith and Jones at 7 o'clock on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. But let's take a look at some best bets tonight. Mine are Valentine's Day themed, because it's Valentine's Day.
You really enjoyed putting these together.
It was so exciting. How about a Sam Reinhart goal tonight? +140.
And not even that big of a stretch, because, no, of course, Sam Reinhart has been near the top of the Rocket Richard race.
Sam Reinhart.
All year long.
Sam Reinhart goal. I'm going to give you two more. Ryan Hartman to score, +310.
There's a heart in that name as well.
And then how about Pascal to be the top scorer tonight? That's +290. I think he's going to want to go off against the Raptors tonight.
And his logo is a heart, so that works.
That's it.
I got a heart thought. It's about the Hart Trophy, though. Connor McDavid, if you missed it, had 6 assists last night.
Mm-hmm.
Connor McDavid is 10 points back, I believe, of Nathan MacKinnon in the Art Ross race with about 5 games in hand. What are we going to do when McDavid just laps the field and ends up being the leading point getter in the NHL and the Oilers are the one or two seed in the Pacific Division? Like, I know a lot of people want to give it to Nathan MacKinnon this year because it's his time, right? And mm-hmm. he's been kind of hard luck across his career, coming second and third in a lot of Hart Trophy votes. But if Connor McDavid's just the better player this year, Connor McDavid's going to win the Hart Trophy again. So if he makes up the ground that he needs to make up, Connor McDavid at plus 350, that's something you can never get. But you can get it right now. Connor McDavid ends the season strong, plus 350, I think it's a good price.
I love it. Get it?
I thought you might. Also, Scotty Barnes. I think there's going to be a bounce back. I'm a little down on Scotty Barnes, just overall. Mm-hmm. But after you're eating gummy worms on the way to the dressing room while everyone catches you on TV and everyone's having this referendum about mm-hmm. Scotty Barnes afterwards, mm-hmm. and everyone thinks, you know, maybe this isn't going the way that the Raptors had planned, maybe he'll bounce back. Raptors, obviously hosting the Pacers. Scotty Barnes bounces back over 37.5 points, rebounds, and assists. Just gets involved after, disengaging from the last game a little bit too early.
All right. More Scotty Barnes, more Pascal Siakam to come, and more heart talk because we're going to have John Bucci-Gross of the NHL on ESPN join us after the break. We'll take a quick break. We'll be back on the Fan Pregame.
Everything Raptors, before and after the games. The Raptor Show with Will Liu. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back on the Fan Pregame. Sportsnet, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. It's Valentine's Day. Feeling the love. Talking about the Hart Trophy. Can Connor McDavid do it? He got 6 assists last night. 6. I don't think you've ever got 6 assists in your life, Justin.
Sorry, I mean, I'm not Connor McDavid.
In your, you know, I mean, in your like cumulative hockey career.
Stats. The stats are online. Give me a break.
You don't pass at the swimming ducks,
more
eh?
Of a goal scoring season for us.
Yeah? Good for you.
Thank you.
I mean, that's not good for you.
Why is that not good?
Well, it's selfish. Today's about sharing love. We're going to have John Bucci-Gross.
It could be selfish day, too.
Yeah, we're going to have John Bucci-Gross in a second. Apparently, there's a stadium series games this weekend.
Yeah, that snuck up a little bit.
You know what?
Another local event for the NHL.
Yeah, I was going to say, well, it's in New Jersey, right?
Yeah.
Jonas Brothers are headlining.
Cool.
It
they
is
have
cool.
All 4 of the teams in the area, they're going at it. Like,
I
it's
just
good.
Wish they. I wish maybe it's me not knowing that these things are happening, but it's not. It's not hitting me in the face online. It just appeared when I was doing research today. Oh, by the way, there's a game this weekend. I don't know. Maybe they need to do more marketing, or maybe we're just living in the haze of the NHL All-Star Weekend being here, and it was all Toronto, 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 Toronto.
Yeah, it's a bit of a pivot, right? A pretty hard turn. 2 weeks later, you're pushing out to outdoor games.
The Jonas Brothers is a good performance.
It's no Bieber, though.
You're right. We're spoiled.
We were pretty spoiled.
When Bieber's in your backyard, like, I don't know how we're ever going to top that. John Bucci-Gross of the NHL and ESPN joins us.
He's in our backyard.
Yes. How's it going, Bucci? Thanks for jumping on.
I'm doing well. How are you?
What does your shirt say?
Hot, fresh, and saucy.
Happy Valentine's Day.
Hart Trophy winner right here, baby.
There you go. You know what? Actually, I think the biggest question of the day is chicken parm a good Valentine's Day dinner? Or, like, should we be shooting for the moon tonight?
Well, you know, today's the first day of Lent, so I can't eat the chicken parm. I had it last night. Okay. And I'll have it again tomorrow.
Okay.
The leftovers.
There you go. Now, you're the king of those, so we know.
Okay, the king of
it's a chicken parm reference.
Yeah, I think so.
We hope so.
Yeah. I am not hot, fresh, or saucy.
Maybe your takes are.
Yeah, we'll see. And everyone's given their take on Morgan Riley's suspension, so we might as well just keep the train rolling. Mm. It ends up being 5 games after the weekend event with Ridley Gregg and the cross check and the retribution and the 72-hour. Decision by the NHL. Do you really have any issue with the ultimate decision of 5 games for Morgan Riley?
Yeah, I kind of got out of the Twitter suspension business a long time ago.
Good for you.
Yeah, good call.
I become completely agnostic, completely when it comes to suspensions and things like that. I don't even feel them anymore hardly. So, you know, if that was me, I probably would have done three. So I guess that's probably what I would have done. Five seems a little harsh maybe on my end. But again, I'm kind of a caveman when it comes to hockey violence.
What about the unwritten rules of hockey? Because now we've been going back and we've been relitigating what you can and cannot do. And I mean, I probably wouldn't have taken a slap shot on an empty net in like college or pro, but I never was on the ice during an empty net. I was stapled to the bench anyway. So I wouldn't know if that came across, but I probably wouldn't have done it. I don't know if you're having conversations about unwritten rules or not, but like, did he cross? Did he break an unwritten rule?
Yeah, that's another area where because baseball, as we know, is full of them, right? And they've kind of you know taken themselves less seriously. I think it's the Latin and Hispanic influence on baseball has been good in terms of, hey, you want to flex after a home run, go at it. Mm-hmm. It doesn't offend me. We're back in the old days. Obviously, you got the buzz, you got the tower buzz after something like that. They seem to be a little more lenient on guys watching balls go over the fence and things like that, I guess, as long as you don't take it too far. But yeah, the unwritten rules thing, I've always been confused. I have a hard time with the written rules. So to try to remember all the hard written rules. And like I said, it's the most emotional game. I'm like a lot of, I'm sure, people listening or watching and, you know, growing up being that average kind of high school, small college athlete, I played everything. And by far, it's the most emotional game that makes you do things you would never do otherwise. It turns you into a maniac. And so I don't know what I would have done in a situation where there's rivalries and who knows what was said to him going back and forth and the chirping going on and the stuff that was said that made it cross the line. And so he's filled with a bit of this anger and he is doing that as a result of something that we can't even see or feel. In the end, again, it wouldn't have offended me. If he took a slapper like that, it's just, but not a big deal. But I know some people are. And so you're right. I probably wouldn't have, thinking just in case I would have offended somebody and I wouldn't want to get a cross check to the mouth. And it's not really sending that much of a message, right? It's not really a message. It's going to have much productivity going forward, a slap shot into an empty net. But again, it looked kind of cool. And just like when the guy takes a slap shot on a penalty shot, right, or a shootout move, that's always fun. When Brian Ralston used to do it and Zdeno Chara used to do it, that was kind of cool. Just wasn't a goalie this time.
You make a good point about
sensitive of him.
Yeah, you make a good point about it being sports specific, because baseball's rules or unwritten rules are changing as we speak, and Jose Bautista might have some place in that. But thinking back to, you know, comparing it to other things, like it's often in soccer, a goal goes in and someone will run 25 yards, boot it back into the net in celebration, and no one really cares. Like it is completely sports specific, but in the sport that you're playing, and if you play that sport, especially at a high level, really any level, you kind of know what's kosher and what's not. And I think everyone, including Greg's teammates, kind of knew it crossed the line, or at least there's going to be some sort of conversation to come afterwards. And of course, it was more than just a conversation. News from last night, Phil Kessel skating with the Abbotsford affiliate for Vancouver, the Vancouver Canucks. Yeah. Obviously, Phil Kessel had a good run with Rick Tocchet with the Pittsburgh Penguins when Tocchet was an assistant coach. It was not promised to Phil that he'd be playing this year, despite, you know, winning Stanley Cup last year, the Vegas Golden Knights. Do you think this is going to work in Vancouver for Phil?
Yeah, this is hockey's a long season. From the start of training camp, you could literally make a human baby by the time they lift the Stanley Cup. Like that's how long this season is. You could make a human life from conception to birth. It happens. So it's long. And these players right now, this is like August for baseball, right? February, these are the dog days. You've had enough. You played 50 games. We know who's good. We know who isn't. We know who's kind of good. And so I think you need these little refresher situations to give a team life. And that's why the trade deadline's fun, and why I think some locker rooms, dressing rooms, teams like when the GM makes a trade, just because it kind of gives them a little new sense of life. New blood comes in. Okay, something to get excited about for the last, you know, month, right, going into the playoffs. And so Phil's that kind of guy, and obviously Tocchet knows he's a light guy in the room. People laugh at him. He relaxes people because of his humor and his ability to, you know, humor himself and humor others. So I think that alone, I think, will make this a plus. That kind of guy brings a lot of personality into a room that's, you know, Brock Besser's quiet. Quinn Hughes is kind of quiet. Mm-hmm. You know, Elias Pettersson's probably a little more sneaky, funny, probably, but kind of quiet. So I think it's good to bring some life in the room.
Yeah, Canucks 10 points up on the Golden Knights in the Pacific. So, I mean, they don't need the boost, but they'll get one if they get Phil the Thrill in there. We're sure he'll score some sort of beautiful goal at a clutch moment in the playoffs. Let's talk about McDavid, because last night he got 6 assists, which is absurd, but apparently not even the record. It is 7. Close. But I wonder for you, like, the likelihood or the inevitability of McDavid chasing down McKinnon for the heart. We've been talking about the heart. It is Valentine's Day. Wondering if that's just something that we're going to wait and watch happen in front of our eyes here.
It could. I mean, it's 30 games. There's plenty of time. Kucherov, I don't think he's going to catch Kucherov for the scoring lead if Kucherov doesn't get hurt. Mm-hmm. I think that lead's just too big, and Kucherov is going to have those 3-4 point nights. And, you know, McDavid's not going to do this every night, and there'll be times where he has an off night, especially down the stretch. He's not going to be chasing, I don't think, an MVP or a scoring title. He's obviously, we know what he's chasing, that's the cup. And we saw what happened to the Bruins last year, kind of chasing records. I think it just grinds you down mentally. That's why I think these little lulls that teams have is actually good. It kind of gives your brain and the Bruins are on a lull right now. They just do not. They're a little flat. You know, they look terrible against the Capitals on national TV over the weekend. And they're just flat right now. Mm. But again, last year, they were just chasing the record. And by the time they got to the playoffs, you can't find that other gear. And they end up blowing a 3-1 series lead, losing 2 games at home, and the Panthers moved on. So I don't think McDavid is going to be chasing, put it that way. I've had an MVP vote and all the big awards the last 2 years. It's been really cool. I never saw it coming. I like to do it. But as long as he's in the league, I'm not going to be one of those people who looks back and say they didn't vote Connor McDavid in his prime for MVP. You know, even if he doesn't win the scoring title this year, if he plays the rest of the games, and so obviously they're going to finish strong and see how high they finish, I'll still probably vote him MVP because he's the best player in the league by far. Mm-hmm. And he's having a good year and his team is doing well. They went on the long winning streak. So, and obviously he's the centerpiece of it. And he lives it and breathes it. And he's carrying the whole city on his shoulders. And we know what a tight marketplace that is and kind of a negative place it can be at times. It's all there is. So like I said, he's still going to be probably my favorite. If he keeps it going, keeps playing, doesn't get hurt, keeps producing, in the end, even if he doesn't make the scoring title, I think I'll probably still vote for him.
Yeah, he's not chasing a record, but we know Ovi is. And I know you've been all over the Ovi goal chase.
Yeah.
He's 59 back now, goals in 6 straight. He's back. Like, Ovi is back. I know you've been updating when and how long it'll take, but it feels like it was gone for a bit, but it does feel like it's going to happen in the next year or two at this point. Where are you at with the Ovi chase?
Yeah, you know, I think it's right in line with his contract. Like you said, 59. I think you might, let's say, give him 10 more this year. Mm-hmm. He's not going to keep up this streak. There's 30 games left. You know, a goal every other game is 15. Mm-hmm. That's still a 40-goal rate. I don't think he's a 40-goal scorer quite anymore. It's one of those years where everything good happens, or as opposed to this year where nothing good happened the first 40 games. So let's give him 10 more just to be conservative, and then he's down to 49. Again, he's not going to get that next year, but he certainly could get 25-25, right? Mm-hmm. And get it late that last year of his contract. That's how I look at it. It's going to be late in the 25-26 season. I think I said March 7th, 2026 is now my official prediction.
I like that. Yep.
Write that down. Yeah, put that on your refrigerator, on your Post-it, and see how close Bucci comes. But yeah. So I think, if I was his older brother, I would say, Alex, don't focus on the record. Focus on 900. Mm-hmm. Like, try to get 900 goals. Just, can you imagine? Just think of that. 900 goals. You know, like for us, 500 as a kid growing up, like 500 is a number, whether it's home runs or goals as a kid, that was like the number 500. And then you got freaks coming along, like, you know, Wayne, those guys getting 600 and then even 700. And then Wayne got 800. But just to say you scored 900 NHL goals, it's amazing. Like I said, Jaromir Jagr was scoring goals at 44, 45. And I don't think Ovi's going to stop playing. Like, I don't think he should be drinking Coca-Cola on the bench anymore in the Gatorade bottles. He actually drinks cola on the bench. I couldn't believe that. Our Emily Kaplan had that report last year during the season.
Crazy.
Like, he's got to make some changes. He's got to drop about 15, 20 pounds. He's got to start eating like, you know, and approach a game like Sidney Crosby off the ice. Russia Machine is 38 now. He's got to make. You know, Jaromir Jagr played till he was 45 because he committed himself 24/7, wearing the weighted vest and sprinting up hotel stairwells, and that's what Ovi's going to have to do. I think make that pivot now, and to so he can continue this record. And like I said, I always thought it was less likely that he would get 1,000 goals than break the record. To me, the broken record, that's an absolute lock. To me, it was less likely that he wouldn't score 1,000, because I still think 1,000 is in play for him if he plays, you know, six more, plays till he's 45. And we see a lot of athletes play till they're 45. If he plays six more years, you know, 25 goals a year, that's 150 goals. Nice, you know, and now he's sniffing 1,000 goals.
Last one for you, John. I'm glad you mentioned Jaromir Jagr, and I'm glad you already mentioned an anecdote, because I was going to ask you for your favorite anecdote about Jaromir Jagr. He'll get his number retired this weekend by the Pittsburgh Penguins. When you look back on the career of Jaromir Jagr, what stands out for you?
Yeah, he's just, you know, right there, one of the most unique, you know, figures, just absolutely singular. Only one like him. I kind of, you know, look at, when I think about Jagr, I really do think about, you know, the early 90s, the late 80s, you know, communism, and obviously the Soviet Union and all that went with that. And I kind of grew up in that era as a kid of the, you know, 80s, a little bit of 70s and the 80s, and just how much he couldn't wait to get to America. I think he had like a picture of Ronald Reagan or something, I think, in his bedroom wall or something. Like he just couldn't wait to get to America and loved coming here. And then he took it all in Pittsburgh, you know. And there's just such an innocence about him. You look back at his face and his smile and the hair, and just there's really no one like him. Like, this is singular. So it's really that kind of macro look at him as a young kid coming over at that age from this country that, you know, that the United States must, because back then, obviously, kids weren't more worldly. People, you know, the kids just weren't as worldly as they are now. And, you know, I was roughly his age. And so it just must have been unbelievable the way he looked at life and that first flight over to America, and then just being in this country and barely speaking English at all and just trying to operate on a day-to-day basis. And then, bam, going out, win two Stanley Cups right away. And then just the character grew and it matured. He's aged really interesting. He's an interesting guy. He's a talented guy. He's a unique guy. Absolute gem. In terms of the way he's decorated the hockey world during his time.
Yeah, an all-time NHL character, and he's made us wait too long to celebrate him, at least in terms of the Hockey Hall of Fame, but at least the Pittsburgh Penguins. We'll get that out of the way. Good on him. Keep playing. We can wait for that celebration, because it'll come, and it'll be great nonetheless. John, we appreciate catching up. It was good meeting you at NHL All-Star, and we'll chat again soon.
Well, it's my pleasure and honor. Thank you.
It's John Buchgrass of ESPN. NHL on ESPN.
Who'll be drinking cola on the bench?
He's been reaching for cola for a while.
Where was I when that story was being talked about? Because that is outrageous.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean,
first
a little
of all,
immediate sugar intake.
But, like, it's, you can't just chug, like, you can't, you know,
it's a Russian machine.
It doesn't go, like, it's fizzly, it's carbonated. It's not something you just quickly chug and get
fizzly?
On the ice. It's fizzly.
Fizzly.
It's fizzly.
It's
fizzly. It's I think it's more than fizzy. It's fizzly.
Oh, and it's an extra bit of fizzy.
It's extra, especially because it's in like a Gatorade bottle. You're shaking it up. It's not.
Yeah.
You're not hopping over the boards.
And I guess
right
he's got to hide it too. No, he does. I guess he's got to hide it too because of like sponsorships and stuff. So he's
that's why he said cola. And not which type of cola.
I guess maybe we don't know which type.
That's wild.
Can you tell the difference between the two?
So, and Bucci's been on this for a while about, March 7th of next year. So that'd be 2026. That's when he thinks it's going to happen.
Yeah, it's about 2 years from now.
That's crazy. Now it feels inevitable because Ovi's got goals in six straight. Remember the beginning of the season? I forget which game we were working. Maybe one of the first ones, and the Caps were here.
Yeah,
down.
Really early on, and
he
struggled.
11
out of the game.
Shots in the first period,
and one of them was his entire body entering the net.
It was crazy.
Yeah,
and we thought it was never going to happen, but inevitably he's back. He's back. All right, we got a couple minutes here. It's Valentine's Day, so thought I'd fit in like a little A-list, a little bit of love today.
I think it's appropriate.
Okay, and it's going to Taylor Swift. Don't turn off your radios or your TV, okay? Because I want to say good things about what she's done for the NFL and for females.
Okay, the floor is yours.
I just think it's important because everyone's all too much Taylor Swift. You know, she was shown for 1% of the entire Super Bowl broadcast. So chill.
That's a lot. One fan for 1% of the entire Super Bowl broadcast.
It was actually less than 1%.
Okay, but if it was exactly 1%, that's.
Producer Mike, can you find the information
amount.
For me? Nonetheless, the Super Bowl attracted a record of 58.8 million female viewers, making a 9% increase from last year.
Okay.
Women accounted for 47.5% of the total audience. This is.
I do have a question about that. Like, okay. People have Super Bowl parties, right?
Yeah.
Like, are there surveys?
Somebody went around and opened every door of every American house and counted every single viewer
okay.
and said, okay, I need to know how many male, female. Okay, yeah. next house. They okay. did that. Anyway.
Did they, like, gauge level of interest in the game while they were
nope.
in the house?
And the interest was equal.
Okay.
That's the highest proportion ever of female viewers. The NFL has earned an additional $331 million in revenue, brand revenue for the Chiefs and the NFL due to Taylor Swift dating Travis okay. Kelce. And the NFL surge in female viewership as goes across different different ages, demographics, teenage girls, everyone. So more females are watching sports. I always think that's important, not only because Travis Kelce and Taylor Swift are dating, but nonetheless, I think you're going to see, hopefully, a boom in interest in a new sport. And as someone that wants more women to be playing, watching, working, broadcasting in the sport, I think it's a win-win-win.
I feel like the biggest win belongs to Kristen Juszczyk.
Well,
like
she's
tracking
killing
that,
it.
Right? Like she landed yeah. like a zillion sponsorship deals yep. and a deal with the NFL to make clothing.
And how did that happen?
And that's been a problem. And it's been Taylor Swift. Mm-hmm. But a lot of and the complaints that I've heard is that people weren't or women weren't happy with the clothing options given by the NFL. And that they've, you know, the Taylor Swift thing is mm-hmm. maybe a bridge towards fixing that via Kristen Juszczyk, who played on the opposite team or her husband played on the opposite team, mm-hmm. which is a kind of a cool storyline from all that.
It's amazing.
Like, I mean, it's all good stuff.
I'm wearing a Travis Kelce shirt, too. But
there you are.
I don't know if you can see it.
Cows on back-to-back days.
Yeah. Anyway, that's it.
Do you have any more Valentines on the A-list?
Well, we had Mike wrote down some sports couples. Because it is Valentine's Day and love. And Swift and Kelce must be the most famous of all current sporting couples.
I would say so. Like immediately sort of usurping everybody, right?
I would say Marie-Philippe Poulin and Laura Stacey, a pretty popular couple.
Yeah. On this show especially.
Morgan Riley and Tessa Virtue.
Yeah.
They just got married this summer. They are like, you know, our Torontonian.
That flew under the radar a little bit.
Well,
though,
they did that on purpose. They didn't want you snooping around at their wedding.
They didn't want a bunch of reporters, NHL reporters, wearing collared shirts.
Kate Upton, Justin Verlander, obviously.
They had their moment in the sun.
Yeah, they did. Anyway, there's lots of ones. Anyway, just that's my list for today. How about a quick, unfortunate pivot back to Scotty Barnes? Because we didn't really get to finish our discussion. I know we have about 30 minutes left on Sportsnet 590 The Fan after this to talk to Smith and Jones, but we're breaking down the Scotty versus Pascal, and I don't want it to sound like it's a versus. It's a day of love and appreciation. But I think you came into the discussion. You said, I don't know if you said you were like a little bit upset with Scotty. I don't know the words you framed it. But I think it's because, and that's okay to have that. I think it's because we have really high expectations. A, because the kid can be a star. He's already come on the scene and produced at a rate that we're obviously impressed with. He's Rookie of the Year. He's an all-star, whether he was voted in originally or not. I think that means that we want something from a young Scotty Barnes, but I think we can also, and as the media and as fans, point out parts of his game that really do need to improve. And that's kind of what this season, I hope, is about, right? If you want one thing for the Raptors this season, health, nobody get hurt. And for Scotty Barnes to find a way to grow into the leader that he ultimately needs to become if the Raptors want to make him the face of their franchise.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I what's encouraging for me is that we're having the conversation about what Scotty Barnes has sort of been about in addition to being about an all-star player in the NBA, right? Because there are other things that people, I think, were actively trying to push aside. And I think that also included inside the executive team and the management team. Like, if fans really want to defend Scotty, because of course they want to get behind Scotty. But if everyone is seeing it through the same lens, including those who are making decisions about the basketball team or for the basketball team, well, that's a culture of, you know, lacking accountability. And we've seen that with the Maple Leafs a little bit, where we're thinking like, is anyone going to just like put them in their place every now and then? Like, you got to be put in your place every now
Definitely.
And then. And Scotty's actions of late, put in the place worthy. And someone's got to do it. And if it's just going to be, no, it's okay, Scotty, just come back next game and we'll be all right. then you're going to get the same results over and over and over until you actually do something about it.
He's got a big opportunity to change this narrative, at least stop it tonight against Pascal Siakam. It's going to be a big one. We got 30 more minutes on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. We're going to talk to Smith and Jones from Scotiabank Arena, where they'll be having a tribute video very soon for Pascal. So get in your seats. We'll take a quick break. We'll be back with Smith and Jones on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.